विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तरशत श्री श्रीमद एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय। अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय। ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवतम की जय। ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज। ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री श्री गुरु एंड गौरंगा। नारायणं नमस्कृत्या नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेषु भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवति उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्टिके। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 9 चैप्टर 12 text 1 through 6 it's 6 and 9 through 16 all right the chapter doesn't have any purports. So chapter 13, and we're going to go through to verse number, there's a purport, 5 and 6, iti utsrajya. Okay, but I'm going to read the whole chapter though. Okay. सोऽसावास्ते योगसिद्धः कलापग्राममास्थितः कलेरन्ते सूर्यवंशम् नष्टं भावयिता पुनः। सोऽसावास्ते योगसिद्धः कलापग्राममास्थितः कलेरन्ति सूर्यवंशम् नष्टं भावयिता पुनः। सोऽसावास्ते योगसिद्धः कलापग्राममास्थितः कलेरन्ति सूर्यवंशम् नष्टं भावयिता पुनः। सोऽसावास्ते योगसिद्ध कलापग्राममास्थितः कलेरन्ते सूर्यवंशम् नष्टं भावयिता पुनः। सः Asau, the personality known as Maru. Aste, still existing. Yoga Siddha, perfection in the power of mystic yoga. Kalapagramam, the place named Kalapagrama. Asthitaha, he is still living there. Kalehe, of this Kali Yuga. Ante, at the end. Suryavamsham, the descendants of the sun god. Nashtam, after being lost. Bhavayita, Maru will begin by begetting a son. Punaha, again. Translation and purports by Srila Prabhupada ki jai. I'm going to read from the beginning of the chapter so there is context. Okay, this is chapter 12, the dynasty of Kusha, the son of Lord Ramachandra. Text 1. Shukadeva Goswami said, the son of Ramachandra was Kusha. The son of Kusha was Atithi. And the son of Atithi was Nishadha. And the son of Nishadha was Nabha. The son of Nabha was Pundarika. And from Pundarika came a son known as Kshemadhanva. Madhav Gauranga, can you reduce the volume a little bit? There's so much echo. Thank you. Text 2. The son of Kshemadhanva was Devanika. Devanika's son was Aniha. Aniha's son was Pariyatra. And Pariyatra's son was Balasthala. The son of Balasthala was Vajranabha, who was said to have been born from the effulgence of the sun god. The son of Vajranabha was Sagana, and his son was Vidhruti. The son of Vidhruti was Hiranyanabha, who became the disciple of Jaimini and became a great acharya of mystic yoga. It is from Hiranyanabha that the great saint Yajnavalkya learnt the highly elevated system of mystic yoga known as Adhyatma Yoga, which can loosen the knots of material attachment in the heart. The son of Hiranyanabha was Pushpa, and the son of Pushpa was Dhruvasandhi. The son of Dhruvasandhi was Sudarshana, whose son was Agnivarna. The son of Agnivarna was named Shighra, and his son was Maru. And today's verse. Having achieved perfection in the power of mystic yoga, Maru still lives in a place known as Kalapagrama. At the end of Kali Yuga, he will revive the lost Surya dynasty by begetting a son. Purport. At least 5,000 years ago, Srila Shukadeva Goswami ascertained the existence of Maru in Kalapagrama and said that Maru, having achieved a Yoga Siddha body, will continue to exist until the end of Kali Yuga, which is calculated to continue for 432,000 years. Such is the perfection of mystic power. By controlling the breath, the perfect yogi can continue his life as long as he likes. Sometimes we hear from the Vedic literature that some personalities from the Vedic age, such as Vyasadeva and Ashwatthama, are still living. Here we understand that Maru is also living. We are sometimes surprised that a mortal body can live for such a long time. The explanation of this longevity is given here by the word Yoga Siddha. If one becomes perfect in the practice of yoga, he can live as long as he likes. The demonstration of some trifling Yoga Siddha does not constitute perfection. Here is a factual example of perfection. A Yoga Siddha can live as long as he likes. Text 7. From Maru was born a son named Prashruta. From Prashruta came Sandhi, and from Sandhi came Amarshana, and from Amarshana a son named Mahaswan. From Mahaswan, Vishwabahu took his birth. From Vishwabahu came a son named Prasenajit. From Prasenajit came Takshaka, and from Takshaka came Brihadbala, who was killed in a fight by your father. By your father? Who's Parikshit Maharaj's father? Arjuna? Did you say Arjuna? Who's Parikshit Maharaj's father? Abhimanyu. Abhimanyu is Arjuna's son. And his son is Parikshit Maharaj. All these kings in the dynasty of Ikshvaku have passed away. Now please listen as I describe the kings who will be born in the future. From Brihadbala will come Brihadrana. The son of Brihadrana will be Urukriya, who will have a son named Vatsavriddha. Vatsavriddha will have a son named Prativyoma, and Prativyoma will have a son named Bhanu, from whom Divaka, a great commander of soldiers, will take birth. Thereafter, from Divaka will come a son named Sahadeva, and from Sahadeva, a great hero named Brihadashva. From Brihadashva will come Bhanuman, and from Bhanuman will come Pratikashva. The son of Pratikashva will be Supratika. Thereafter, from Supratika will come Marudeva. From Marudeva, Sunakshatra. From Sunakshatra, Pushkara. And from Pushkara, Antariksha. The son of Antariksha will be Sutapa, and his son will be Amitrajit. From Amitrajit will come a son named Brihadraja. From Brihadraja will come Barhi, and from Barhi will come Kritanjaya. The son of Kritanjaya will be known as Rananjaya, and from him will come a son named Sanjaya. From Sanjaya will come Shakya, and from Shakya will come Suddhoda, and from Suddhoda will come Langala. From Langala will come Prasenajit, and from Prasenajit, Kshudraka. From Kshudraka will come Ranaka, from Ranaka will come Suratha, and from Suratha will come Sumitra, ending the dynasty. This is a description of the dynasty of Brihadbala. The last king in the dynasty of Ikshvaku will be Sumitra. After Sumitra, there will be no more sons in the dynasty of Sun God, and thus the dynasty will end. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 9th canto, 12th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Dynasty of Kusha, the Son of Lord Ramachandra. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Sva Padantikam Vancha Kalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. How's everyone? Comfortable? Warm? Sleepy? According to the yoga system, and Prabhupada refers to this, that every person has, from karma's perspective, a certain time, a certain length of time that they will live. So we're all, as our birth is determined, so is our death. So from a karma perspective, it is said that we are born at such and such time, we'll die at such and such time. Yoga system looks at the same thing from a different angle. And the yoga system looks at it as every living being has a fixed number of breaths. And they will live for those number of breaths. If you, or if anyone, any one of us, slows down the breathing process, then we have more time because we have more breaths to finish. If we speed up our breathing, then the time when we'll exhaust them is shorter. For example, I can breathe. Slowly, or you get the point? So if I slow down my breathing, I have longer time in which I can exhaust those breaths. Therefore, you find that yogis are interested in how they control their breath, breathing process. So by breathing process, so by slowing it down, you increase longevity. So according to this purport, this person Maru, who became perfect in the yoga practice. Yoga is not what we see nowadays. That's not even yoga, that's bhoga. That's enjoyment. Recently I saw a video of what's called beer yoga. This beer yoga is done at 6 o'clock in the evening, after people have spent a long day at work and they're very tired. This woman has designed a yoga methodology where they hold a bottle of beer in their hand, and according to the stretch that they take a swag, a little sip of beer. Then they move this way and take another sip. Then they move that way and take another sip. And by the end of the hour, they're intoxicated like anything. This is not yoga. This is cheating. That you mix happy hour and yoga together is not okay. Not when we say yoga, we're not talking of, that's what Prabhupada writes, this kind of gymnastic is not yoga. Yoga means to take deliberately our attention, our desires, our aspirations towards Krishna, and to keep it there, and to make it steady and fixed in all walks of life, at all times of day. That is yoga. That means to feel connected. You know, as long as we are connected, the phone's battery is charging. As soon as you disconnect, it starts discharging. So yoga means to always be connected. So that's that kind of yoga system. So when he's got perfected, then what they do is they breathe very, very slowly. They become expert at controlling their breath. In the fourth canto, when Dhruva Maharaj's pastime is discussed, it is this said that Dhruva Maharaj, in 6 months, saw the Supreme Lord. Or should we say, in 6 months, the Supreme Lord showed himself to Dhruva Maharaj. So it's described how he went through. The first, he stood with his hands raised, or in this position, and the right foot resting on the left knee. So he was standing on one leg. It's called Tadasana, tree pose. So he stood like that, And is described in the first month, he ate some wild berries. I forget the chronology, but the second month, he ate only no more berries and fruits. He only ate dry leaves that had fallen to the ground. In the third month, he cut it down further, once in 15 days or something like that. In the fourth month, he drank water, a palm full of water, once every 15 days. And in the fifth month, that also reduced. He stopped drinking water. And by the sixth month, he was taking a breath, one breath, in 15 days. Can you imagine how he slowed things down? That's it. For 15 days, no more breath. So one might think, man, he will die. Actually, he became even more spiritually surcharged by controlling his breath. So this person, Maru, is doing something similar. He's controlling his breath to such a degree that he increased his longevity. So he has, suppose, let's say he has 100 breaths. And if he breathes once in 6 months or once in a year, one breath in 1 year, over 100 breaths, how many years does he live? 100 years. Right? That's how it's calculated. So suppose he has 1,000,000 breaths. One breath a year. 1,000,000 years. No problem. How do we breathe? We don't even know. Right? So Prabhupada says that when our activities are in passion and ignorance, rajas and tamas, then they increase our breathing. And Prabhupada once mimicked how breathing is. He said, when a person is engaged in sexual activity, and then he imitated the breathing. That's what happens. So by such activity, one is exhausting one's breaths very quickly. Have you noticed? The faster the heart beats, the more breaths we take. So look in nature. Animals that breathe very fast have a short lifespan. And animals that breathe slowly have longer lifespan. Take dogs. They have short lives. Their whole life cycle is, they considered, 1/7 of a human life. That's why we say dog years, you know, so many inhuman years. If a dog is 5 years old, we say, oh, in human years, it's 35 years old. That's because the dog breathes so fast. You make it run, he'll come and sit down. That's how the dog breathes. So when our activities are such that they make our heart beat faster, so that our breathing is faster, then from the fixed amount of breaths that we have, we're taking away those breaths. So activities of passion and ignorance, which is the main quality of Kali Yuga, therefore, it is said people in Kali Yuga have short lives. Right? Isn't that in first canto of Bhagavatam? Prayena Alpayusha Sabhya. In Kali Yuga, almost everyone has a short life. Why? Because we are all living activities, or we are living lifestyles of passion and ignorance. The way we live, what we eat, what our aspirations are, the anxieties, the fears, the concerns, the sadness, the competition, all of these make our breathing faster. And so to counteract it, we have to come to goodness minimally, because goodness slows things down at a proper pace. And the more therefore when you read Bhagavad Gita, the very first word Krishna uses about food in the mode of goodness, he says, Ayu, food that increases your longevity. Suppose we eat something that is extremely spicy. We don't say, my tongue is burning. What do you say? My tongue is burning. You see? The breathing becomes very fast. If someone injects, I've never done drugs, but I'm assuming when you do, the whole heart starts beating in a particular way. Now you see, an embryo that is in the womb, the heartbeat is very, very high, because it has a short span within the womb within which it has to grow very, very quickly. It's a very highly active gestation period within 40 weeks or 36, between 36 and 40 weeks. It has to develop all the organs, all the cells, the nervous system, the lumbar system, the digestive system, the brain has to become nourished, the whole thing. And then has to have enough strength to come out of the birthing canal. So the heartbeat is at 160 and 180 beats a minute. And as soon as the child is born and the umbilical cord is cut, within a few hours the breathing comes to about 100 beats a minute. And very quickly, it comes towards the normal human heartbeat. That's about 72 beats a minute. That's the pace. Now you can slow it, yogically, you can slow it down. It's not just breathing, because there are lifestyle also is necessary. So Prabhupada is writing that this Maru person is still alive, or at least at the point when Shukadeva Goswami was speaking, he said he was still alive, waiting somewhere in a place called Kalapagrama, waiting for Kaliyuga to be over. And as soon as Kaliyuga will be over, he will continue the Sun dynasty. So at that point, that Sun dynasty had paused. So now you know, in Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna says, I spoke the science to Sun God spoke it to Manu, Manu spoke it to Ikshvaku, and at some point, this disciplic succession was broken. Yoga Nashta Parantapa. This is where that lineage is stopped. So Krishna says, I'm restarting it for you because I'm instructing you. Right? What is that verse where Krishna says, I spoke this science. Evam parampara praptam imam rajarshayo viduhu sakale neha mahata yoganashta parantapa. Mahata. Sa kale neha mahata. By the influence of time, this great lineage has stopped or broken. Ikshvakur abravit. He spoke to Ikshvaku. Now it's broken. So I am reinstating to you, Arjuna, and speaking this wonderful science of Bhagavad Gita. So Prabhupada writes, one might wonder, we are sometimes surprised that a mortal body can live for such a long time. It's possible, if we know how to do it. Prabhupada would tell once that if you go to North India where the Ganges flows, there are some yogis who come down from the mountains and they take a dip in the river and they come out and they walk back up. And he said, if you look at them, they will look as if they're about 80 years old, 70 or 80 years old. Actually, their age is about 300 years old. Because they have perfected this yogic techniques such by which they don't seem as if they're aging. They're all 100, 200, 300 year old that you cannot tell. They look like 70, 80 years old. Young and strong. Because they've been able to control their breathing process. They've been able to control their lifestyle in such a way that they have nothing that exhausts their breaths. So that's this verse. Today is a day called Vijayadashami. Now for ISKCON devotees, we don't really celebrate. It's in other way, other parts of India you call it Dasara, but we don't really celebrate it the same way as we do Govardhan Puja. But today is the day that has very significant events. Today is the day when Lord Ramachandra killed Ravana. So it's in that sense a very awesome day. Today is also the birthday of, or the appearance day of Srila Madhvacharya, who is the guru in whose line we have, we identify ourselves. We are the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. So Madhvacharya is the line through which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted. So on the one hand, in Ikshvaku dynasty, there is this person called Maru who's living for such a long time. But we'll speak about a fellow whose breathing was ended by an arrow from the descendant of the Ikshvaku dynasty, Lord Ramachandra. So in the Ramayana, before I get to Ramayana, any questions on this? Yoga and breathing and lifespan and lifestyle and... Mohit, there's a mic coming for you.
Thank you. So Prabhu, so it's interesting, it's in contradiction to
Can
science.
Just speak into the mic, please.
It's in contradiction to science, right?
Really?
If you look at an... the whole purpose of exercise is to increase your heart rate and breathing.
The exercise is to increase your heart rate, yes.
And so consequently, there's a correlation between exercise and longevity, a positive one. So if you can help me understand that.
Okay. So the idea is, the question is, exercise and longevity are correlated. And so the idea of exercise is to the cardio is to get the heart pumping, because when your heart gets pumping, then whatever, burning calories, etc. This modality of exercise is designed to get results from very inactive lifestyles. Our lifestyles have become very sedentary. And sedentary lifestyle is unhealthy. In general, in the previous time, or even earlier times, people would walk. And as they would walk or swim or whatever, they were healthier. Now we spend most of our time sitting. We're traveling to work, we're sitting. At work, we're sitting. Everywhere else, we're sitting. And we're sitting in unhealthy postures. So we need something to burn calories faster. So exercise is designed where you run on a treadmill, you work to get the heart pumping to counteract the sedentary whatever is happening because of being sedentary. Okay, because by sedentary lifestyle, certain organs are not exercised. We have machines for everything. Our bodies don't work as much. So then these exercises are designed such to they're counter to this lifestyle. You with me? Okay. So they burn calories. That doesn't mean that is the longevity is because of this exercise. The longevity is because of getting out of a sedentary lifestyle. Okay. Now when a person walks or runs, the heartbeat obviously grows. If you have a brisk walk, then the heart is pumping to provide that energy. But you look at some of the yogis, they walk, they're very healthy, they're skinny like anything. So then you can't look at only this exercise style and say this is what is the reason for longevity. It is all the food, it is all the type of food, the processed, frozen, you know, whatever food that we eat also is creating. So we have to look at it from a holistic perspective, not just that the more the heart rate and cardio, then that is what is longevity. That's a narrow view. That is only to get us, it's a faster way to get things moving. Right? Yeah. So it's not that because there is high heart rate, that is the reason for longevity. That is not the yoga principle. So science looks at everything from very narrow, siloed perspectives. For example, if you go to a doctor and you say, I have a headache, their whole analysis related to the head, it ignores the rest of the body per se, as to what else is happening in the body. Or if something else is happening in the knee, the rest of the body is isolated from their understanding that it's a total unit or machine. And something not working there may have something else going on. And according to medicine, only when pathologically things show up, that's when they treat. If it doesn't show up pathologically, they don't treat. For example, if you were to go and say, I don't feel well, they'll say, go get your blood work done, here's a little vial for urine and stool test, whatever. They'll check everything. Everything shows normal, you're fine. Yeah, but I don't feel well. You're fine. So it has to come to the threshold of pathology, only then yes. So it looks at narrow, very siloed views. Now we're relying on yoga, in this case Yajnavalkya and the previous yoga methods that speak of a full lifestyle. Unfortunately, we are not able to live like that because we don't have that kind of food, we don't have that kind of lifestyle, we don't have that kind of ability to move. The air is not clean, the water is not clean, you know, where we live is not clean, the kind of work we do is not necessarily, you know, the most exciting. So for a very congested, you know, when the bathroom gets clogged, you have to put in some heavy decongestant. So the modern exercise methodology is a heavy decongestant. It's not a sustainable lifestyle. That's what it means. Therefore it works. It works in decongesting. But that's not how one lives. So their lifestyle is natural that exercise is there in it. Everyone worked. Physically people were active, strong. The food they ate was strong, pure. What we eat is all sorts of things, right? Our sugar is contaminated, our water is contaminated, our grains are modified, the list goes on. So this is a very highly aggressive attack at such a lifestyle and food style. But that's not the solution for longevity. Thank you. Giridhar, you had a question?
I'm trying to understand the process of aging.
You're trying to understand the process of aging?
Aging, yeah.
You're 20-something, man. Don't worry about it. When you become 46 like me, then you can worry about aging. In fact, I'm not thinking about aging at all. I feel young. Go ahead.
I guess it's just kind of the breath, the breathing. When you spoke about breathing, brought some clarity to me. I've thought about it before.
Prabhupada spoke like that, so yes.
Just like I thought in reference to like the scientific finding that the body, all the cells of the body regenerate after like 7 years or something like that. So like the physical material elements aren't aging. They're always, matter stays the same. But I'm wondering, what is aging? If the matter is like always stays the same, it's more like a subtle change.
Okay.
Makes sense at all.
So let's go back for a moment to Mohit's point on the ground. It's not that our whole lifestyle is no breathing. If someone says, Prabhu, we need to lift these Bhagavad Gita boxes, we say, oh, that will increase my breathing. I am not. Now, Bhoga is going to come here very soon. Okay? And Narahari will say, can you help unload the Bhoga? Oh, if I were to carry potatoes and you know, all of that, my breathing will increase. I just heard my lifespan will reduce. So, you know what? Ask someone else. No, the idea is it goes through expansions and contractions. Because without certain activities, we cannot survive. We cannot not do certain things. We have to do. That's the point. But then we choose what kind of activities in which we'll spend. It's like having money. If you have money and you say, I will not spend it at all for anything, that's a miser. So an intelligent person is who says, I'll choose where I spend and I will choose where I will not spend. I will not waste money. Right? It's like that. Breathing is, the breaths are a resource. We choose where we to spend. I would rather breathe heavily and die while carrying something for Kishore Kishori than live a long life and do nothing for that. There's a phrase in the Bhagavatam. Even the sequoia trees in California live for 3,000 years. What's the point? What's the point of such a life with a long life that is not used in Krishna service? Shukadeva Goswami chastised. What's the use of breathing if every breath is not used in Krishna service? It's like the breathing of the blacksmith's gallows or whatever it's called. He says, what is the use of a long life, which is like that of a tree, which is not used in Krishna's service? What's the use of this body, of this thing, and he just keeps on? What's the use of the eyes if they're not used for seeing the beautiful forms of Krishna? They're like the plumes of the eyes on the plumes of a peacock. What's the use of having ears if you don't hear Krishna's katha, the descriptions of Krishna's pastimes? These ears are nothing but snake holes where, you know, serpents reside. The legs are no better than trunks of trees if they don't help you walk to the temple. It just hammers it like anything in second canto. So that's the point. Now, matter has six phases or transformations. It comes into being, it grows, it stays, it declines. It creates byproducts, it stays, it declines, and it ends. So matter has to go through these transformations. So while the cells are being replaced every 7 years, the replacement also has an effect by time. Time is influencing. That's one. Second, we use our body for different activities. And depending on how we use our body, the machine goes through aging. Even if you put new parts to an old machine, it doesn't work the same way, because there is a natural, what's called attrition or degradation, by friction, by heat, by time. You may replace as many parts as you want, but there's a natural aging. And that aging is because of time. Here it writes, Kaler Ante Surya Vamsham, at the end of Kali Yuga. So the yoga method is to counteract the influence of time. Time has a particular shakti, an influence, that it degrades everything. Even if you put new parts, it will degrade it, because matter has to follow those laws. So nowadays you see, for people, they replace their knee, they replace their shoulder, they replace this part, they replace that organ, they put a pacemaker to give more electric charge to the heart. These are all replaced parts, new parts that are put in. But these parts cannot counteract the influence of time. So these once in 7 years, when cells are being regenerated, they're not regenerated the same way because of the influence of time. They're slower, not as stronger. And then we are adding something to the body called food, an environment. So we are tasking the body to do much more than it can. Or we are tasking the body or filling energy supply or the elements of energy supply in a very substandard way. So for example, I have a car and it is supposed to run minimally on 87 grade gasoline. If I put kerosene in it or oil from the kitchen here, right? That oil has certain combustion properties, and 87 grade gasoline has a different combustion property. But this oil will help. However, what happens to the engine? It degrades. So we're eating certain kind of food. We're doing certain kinds of activities. We're living in certain places. We are aspiring for certain results. Our determination is of a particular type. So these are all wearing the body down by the three modes of nature. Now, when we know these things, then we can appreciate far more why Krishna gives such a long list and spends so much time describing the three modes of nature. Chapter 14, 17, 18, 13, a little hint at it. And the modes of nature are spoken different places. So is it something subtle? Time, that's the greatest subtle influencer. Does that answer your question? Yes, Caesar, right? Hail Caesar.
Hey Krishna Prabhu, I got a question. So you mentioned those yogis from Himalaya and they are just living like for so long. Mm-hmm. And actually we shouldn't be afraid of death.
Afraid
of death.
Okay.
We shouldn't be. And we are not, I believe. And the question is that in like eight limbs of yoga, it's like a yama, niyama, like a third is asanas, which is like a gymnastics. And I'm like a neophyte, so I'm just wondering, based on those sadhus who are like living so long, I believe that they are living so long to render like service to Krishna for as long as possible and enjoy that service. So from the ISKCON point of view, would it be advisable to engage in asanas as well?
From the Eastern point of view?
Yes.
Like, I don't know what is the Eastern point of view.
No, let me put it that way. Like in Bhagavad Gita, we got like a karma yoga, we got all those yogas, and like in Bhagavad Gita, we don't mention like doing asanas,
right?
The gymnastics. My point is, should we take care of our bodies and to make them
strong?
Yes, yeah, strong to perform the longest to service the Krishna as long as we can, or how is that? And if we should engage in asanas, that's.
I mean, it's a rhetorical question. Should we make our bodies strong to serve Krishna? Of course. Of course. Should we engage in asanas? Depends on each person. Anything that helps strengthen our mood of service is okay. Because Prabhupada said that the first thing to take care is health. The first thing to take care of is health. Then is our sadhana, our practices. And third is our service to Krishna. So one might wonder, isn't sadhana more important? Prabhupada answered, only if you're healthy can you do something. Otherwise, you become dependent on others. However, where some people cannot draw the line is they become health fanatics, that their sadhana and service become compromised. That is the caution Prabhupada gave. They be careful to not overly emphasize on health at the cost of sadhana and service. But one should be mature enough to know, I need to take care of my health, not because health is important, because I have health, I can chant Hare Krishna. That is most important. But I need the health. So I need to be healthy. I need to be feeling rejuvenated and strong, and whatever I need to do, I need to do. I need to work out or exercise, whatever is necessary to be able to chant properly, to think of Krishna and to serve Krishna. So for some persons it's this, for some person it's that, some it's, you know, relaxing, whatever they do to keep the eat this way, eat that way, don't eat this, don't eat that way, whatever it is. Everyone knows what they need to keep their body strong, body and mind strong. So yes, why not? Go ahead. Anant Rupa.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for the wonderful class, Prabhu. You were talking about how yoga sees life in terms of breathing, and like if everybody's destined to live for a fixed amount of years. So if somebody knows that art, can he go against the number of years he has to live and increase his longevity?
Yeah, that's the whole idea here, no? These people are living, breathing in such a way that they're not exhausting their quota of breathing. So they're here longer. Isn't that what the purport says? You can live as long as you like. Here is a factual example of perfection. A yoga siddha can live as long as he likes. The question is, what does he or she do with it? And depending on what they do with it, their lifespan can reduce or extend. It's not just important that one is breathing. Anything, just sitting there and breathing is not enough. Life must have a purpose. It should have a goal. It should have an intention that drives towards that goal. Now, to drive towards that goal, you need certain resources. Breathing or breaths is a resource. So use that. That's the point.
Yes.
Just as money is a resource, and depends on how you use it, it helps you go the long run or not helps you go the long run. However, money acts a little differently, and breathing also acts differently. So when Krishna is involved, even without money, one can go longer in life and not be able to explain it. How it's possible? It's possible, but how, we don't know. You cannot rationally explain. And even life, one is destined to die, but when Krishna is involved, life can extend. In fact, they can come back from the dead also. In Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes, Amogha, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's son-in-law, died of cholera. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu brought him back. Then there was a descendant of, not descendant, but in the next generation of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was a great personality called Saranga Thakur. You know the story of Saranga Thakur? Saranga Thakur was asked by many persons, please initiate me, you know. And he said, no, I'm not qualified to being a guru, forget it. So one night in his dream, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared and told him, I want you to become a guru and initiate. It's important. So he woke up and he promised Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, tomorrow morning, the very first person I see, I will initiate them. So he woke up, it was dark, he went to the river Ganges near Mayapur or Navadvip, dipped in the Ganges. As he was coming out of the water, a dead body was floating. And he came across that body. And he said, I promise that the first body I see, I will initiate. So he chanted the mantra into the ear of the dead body. And the fellow woke up, was revived from the dead. And his name was Murari Chaitanya. So some persons have that. When Krishna's involved, all rationality dies. You cannot explain it. At least our ability to explain it goes away. That's what rationality is. My ability to explain, it goes away. Sudama didn't have any money. The Pandavas were in the forest without any resources. 14 years. Bhima did not come back skinny, bony, tired, and, you know, can you lift the gada? I'm too tired. Is nourished like anything. Kulavecha Sridhar, no money, but was happy like a king. So until Krishna is involved, all these laws operate. Once Krishna is involved, these laws don't operate. So a person who's about to die, Krishna can give some more time. In the pastime of Ajamila, the fellow was dead almost, and Ajamila lived such a, that even he made it to 80 is a big thing. But he got a second chance. So where did the life get extended from? Because the Vishnu Dutas came. So we rely, the Prabhupada wanted all of us to become confident that regardless of what we have or don't have, how many breaths we have, how many dollars we have or don't have, that we want Krishna's intervention in our life. And all the other laws we don't really care much for. Therefore, so much emphasis on asana and this is not there. Prabhupada gave us the emphasis to rely on Krishna's intervention. Because that's the bhakti aspect of it. Not that we should ignore our body, that's not the point. But at some point when Krishna's intervention is there, that's what we rely on. Krishna's grace. Okay? Alright, so no time for a story of how Lord Ramachandra killed Ravana. It's in the Yuddhakanda, 108th chapter. Why 108 is important? It's in the 108th chapter where Lord Rama kills Ravana. briefly, just 2 minutes, and then I'll end. Although there's a lot of description, beautiful details, analogies and metaphors of the whole fighting scene. But Lord Ram was shooting arrows one after the other, and he shot an arrow to decapitate Ravana. Another head showed up. So Lord Ramchandra decapitated it again. One more head showed up. So basically Ravana was not dying. So Lord Ramchandra became surprised, a little shocked. What is this? My arrows are so powerful that no one can stand. So, and Lord Ramachandra considers it's these arrows that killed Vali, the guy who completely emaciated Ravana. Ravana had fought once with Vali. He killed Vali with this arrow. He had shot through 7 sal trees, and the arrow circumambulated the entire earth globe and came back into Lord Ram's quiver. He killed Kabandha in the forest of Dandaka. He was the one who shot Maricha into the ocean. He killed Maricha. He killed these demons. And he's hunting such a powerful arrow and weapon. What's going on with Ravana? So Lord Ramachandra's chariot driver, his name is Matali. Matali is Indra's chariot driver, because the chariot was given by Indra. It came with the chauffeur. So Matali turns around and reminds Lord Ramachandra that the demigods had prayed to you for with a purpose, and that purpose was that one day you will use this Brahmastra like weapon on Ravana. Lord Ramachandra said yes, and then he invoked that Brahmastra weapon, and they described, the weapon is described. The end of this end of the weapon, where you hold, there are feathers. Those feathers were governed by the wind god. And the sharp point in the front was empowered by the fire god and the sun god. That's why it was fiery and blazing like anything. And it has to travel fast. So the body of the arrow was made with ether. But its weight was given by the Meru mountain. And the feathers were made from Garuda's feathers, or plumes. And when Lord Ram pulled the bow became like a crescent moon. And when he shot it, as soon as he placed the arrow on the bow, everyone looked and they were shocked. The demigods were all like stunned because of the sound and the whole weight and the magnitude of that weapon. It had a thundering noise. Everyone was dead silent. Everyone was shocked. It went with such speed that Ravana could not figure out what was going on. And it pierced his heart. And immediately Ravana's bow fell out of his hand, and this massive body, bam, to the floor. The whole earth shook, and the monkeys who were being beaten by the Rakshasa suddenly now had a new vigor, new strength, because they saw that the enemy, the head of the enemy, Ravana, was killed. All the Rakshasas, they were shocked, shell-shocked that Ravana died. So they started running and they were retreating. And the monkeys with new enthusiasm started bashing these Rakshasas like anything. And suddenly this massive war that was happening was brought to an immediate end by this very special astra that was gifted by Lord Brahma. No, gifted, Indra gave it, but it was created by Lord Brahma for Lord Ramachandra's use. So that is the Vijayadashmi. Because I've skipped about 90% of the details, but it is fascinating. But anyway, I hope you have a wonderful day remembering Lord Ramachandra and his absolutely fantastic presence and pastimes. Thank you. Hare Krishna, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.